Hello and welcome to the King Hero IndyCar podcast with Kirby and Justin. Kirby, how are you?
Doing well, Justin. How about yourself?
I am good. I'm really fantastically good, Kirby. Thanks for asking.
Glad to hear.
Kirby, I don't even know where to start. So many things. I've made so many notes to myself since the last episode. I do want to avoid seeming to do what every other IndyCar article and or podcast has done, which is, you know, breaking down thermal and how it can be improved and all that. I certainly want to talk about thermal, but I don't want to dig too deep into that. I think everybody else is doing that for us, and no need.
Okay.
So let's just dive into all things IndyCar, if you don't mind.
Lead the way.
Kerb, has Connor Daly finally realized his true calling in life and is now going total 100% social media and forgetting about driving altogether?
I don't think he's forgotten about driving altogether, but I think he's certainly making a point of investing time and effort into that new career path, and probably a good idea for him.
I agree. It's probably a much better path for him to go. I think you and I talked about last year when you had Linus Lundqvist bringing his seat to every race and Connor Daly couldn't even bother to drag his helmet, 3 hours over to Mid-Ohio from Indy.
Right. Right.
I think that kind of said it all to me. I lost all faith in Connor Daly and his driving when I heard he had to have his mother bring the helmet over because he was offered a seat. I think that tells you all you need to know. So good luck to him in his new ventures.
Yeah, and I have a feeling he'll be successful in those ventures. He seems to be have ability in those areas.
Well, he knows the people. He has a personality. He's presentable.
Right.
So I think for all those reasons, he has a chance. And he's basically kind of signed some kind of deal. Did you pick up on exactly what that was? I mean, it seems to be almost IndyCar sanctioned media.
Well, he's somehow become affiliated with Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s Dirty Mo Media that, among other things, you know, he's got a podcast that he does that's very popular. And so I don't know exactly what the connection is, but he's somehow under the umbrella now of that Dirty Mo Media. And I think he's got a deal where IndyCar will make sure that every race winner is available, you know, on the following Monday or Tuesday to be interviewed by Connor Daly on his podcast. And I think he was also, you know, for example, at a thermal doing on-site stuff on behalf of IndyCar as well.
Kirby, I'm going to be a little bit all over the place, so forgive me. I took a bunch of different notes at a bunch of different times, so can you keep up with me if I jump around a little bit?
I'll do my best. I'll do my best.
Okay. Would Newgarden leave Penske for money?
I have a hard time seeing it. They seem to be a match made in heaven, at least team and driver. It feels like people are trying to make up some sort of dissension among the teammates. I don't know if that's true or if it's just something that the press is trying to gin up. I can't see him leaving for money, and I can't see Penske letting him go for money. He'll get paid what he deserves to get paid, and he'll stay right where he is.
I agree with you. That's the most likely result. I probably am not as sure as you are, primarily because Roger Penske, I mean, I don't know, and this is maybe really unfair, but I mean, his cheapness is starting to become a question, and whether or not he would just pony up the dough for Newgarden or not, I just don't know. I mean, I really don't. I'm not as convinced of that as perhaps you are. The real question, I guess, really is what is an IndyCar driver worth these days? I mean, I would almost argue that some of these guys are, at this point, considering the size of the series and the television ratings, are pretty dramatically overpaid.
I don't fully understand the economics, but it was reported in the last couple of days that Marcus Erickson's getting paid $4 million, for example. You know, Hurd is the highest paid at something like $7 million, right? Which was partially, supposedly had to do with Formula One, you know, aspirations of the team and taking him with him. But of course, there's still that pesky matter of
who is Hurd's agent? Pat that guy on the back. Yeah. He picked a moment in time and signed. I mean, there's no way Hurd could get that today. No way. Not, he wouldn't even get half of that.
No, and you know, it. Michael seems to be throwing money around a lot more freely since that Dan Tauris with Gainbridge bought into his team, or he's made some big money friends, and that seems to have helped him to realign his driver salary efforts. If you look at Pato Award, let's say just say 3.5 for conservative to be conservative. Erickson, $4 million. I mean, what's Newgarden worth? Throw out Herta as an outlier because that just is kind of ridiculous. But yep. You know, I think Penske's got to offer him at least 5, don't you?
That's probably the bottom figure that Newgarden's agent would be pushing for. But again, I mean, if I'm Roger Penske, honestly, I would be saying, well, no, I'm not going to pay you that. You know, what are you going to do? Were you going to go somewhere else? You know, go ahead. I can pick up Lundgaard for cheap, much cheaper. And, you know, he's got a longer life shelf life than you do. And he's probably as good a driver. At least he will be by the time he's has a year or two with me.
Well, I think that, Newgarden is positioned to end up doing special things, at least in the history books of IndyCar. And I got to believe that Penske would like to have him do all of that with Team Penske. Like, he recognizes fair value. I don't think he's, you know, dumb that way. And, those guys got to be getting paid like $3 million as it is now, don't you think? Power Newgarden anyway. Maybe not McLaughlin yet, but he'll pay more than Erickson, more than Pato, not as much as Herta. And I'd imagine somebody like McLaren might make a run at him and offer him Herta money. And Newgarden might have to make that kind of choice.
Okay. And so I guess, you know, to kind of sum up what you say in a nutshell, which I agree with, is I figure Penske is going to take $1 million for his team. In other words, to be on Team Penske, yeah, you can go make a million more somewhere else, but to, you know, I'm going to keep that million in my pocket because you're with us.
Right. Newgarden's got to make that choice. But I don't think Newgarden's going to be faced with a choice where Penske is lowballing him. I just don't think that'd be the case.
Well, Kerb, let's start digging down in the morass, because underlying all of this is the questionable health of the IndyCar series. And I say that because we've had two rather poor television ratings in a row now, with no excuses for either of them. You got St. Pete, which was down 18% year on year with no discernible difference that there should have been. And you had Thermal, which was kind of a bit of a ratings disaster as well. Is this really poor timing now for IndyCar as they're in the middle of negotiating this contract? Or doesn't it matter? Is the point like it's only up from here? Or, you know, how do you spin this to get a better deal next time around, Kerb? How do you do it?
I don't know how you spin this to make yourself a better media deal. You know, I know that the ratings for Thermal were spun in the worst possible way they could be spun, probably deservedly so. Kevin Lee pointed out on his show that they were relatively on par with last year's Texas race, which is about the same time frame. So you could spin it that way if you wanted to, because last year they still ended up with their best season-long ratings in quite some time, as I'm sure you heard them tell you. You know, I think you just got to say the spin is the real season doesn't start till Long Beach, right? Because when you hit Long Beach, it's nonstop for like 7 weeks or something like that. I mean, it's so, I guess what your spin has to be, right? When you got this unfortunate scheduling issue right now. You got the first race of the year, and then you got 6 weeks till the next real race. Don't judge us on this. Judge us when we get to April and get to Long Beach and Barber, and we really hit our stride and don't have these long breaks. That's probably the spin I would try to give anybody I'm trying to convince to pay me a lot of money.
I can't imagine any executive at NBC buying that at this point. You might sell somebody else, but...
No, you got to try to sell Fox, don't you? That's what you're trying to sell. You know, you're trying to sell Fox to make a big offer, and NBC either matches it or says goodbye. Our crowd on site at Long Beach was up. That's a good sign. Please forgive us for thermal. And look at Long Beach. Look at Barber. Ticket sales are strong there. Indianapolis 500 ticket sales are ahead of last year. And last year was, you know, near sellout. Blah, 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 blah. So that's probably the best bit of lipstick it could put on this right now. What do you think? How would you spin it?
That's a dangerous question to ask me, Curb.
No, how would you spin it in favor of IndyCar to try to get a good deal? That's the question you asked.
I would say that we are an incompetent marketing organization that has acknowledged our incompetency. And so what you are seeing now is the low tide of our popularity. And that we have a 24-month plan in place where we are going to increase interest in the series. We are going to spend a ton of money to get behind those efforts, that we are going to make some fundamental changes in the way we've marketed our business, and going forward, acknowledging that we are much better at running race car teams and other business empires than we are at being in the promotion and marketing and running a race series business. And we are going to bring in the professionals. And therefore, even if you pay us a little bit over the odds at this point, you are going to get paid back tenfold, because you are going to be buying in at the low ebb of the market.
And so all the extra money you're giving us is going to go right back into marketing the product and raising interest.
Yes. Now, that's a humility I'm pretty sure you're never going to see from Penske Entertainment, but that's exactly what I would say.
Okay. So you're saying you would lie, is what you're saying.
Well, I guess after I uttered those words, I would be in the employment of Penske Entertainment for all of about 5 more milliseconds.
I mean, you aren't really spinning the ratings of the first two races. You're saying we see the error of our ways. We're going to go out and hire some professionals that are going to really upgrade what we're doing. And we're going to listen to what they tell us and do what they tell us, even if we don't like it.
And spend the money. And spend the money.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Do what they tell us.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the local high school and get a better podium than we have now for our races.
Oh, my God. And I know it's been commented on, that podium at Thermal. I know it's been commented on many things, but I noticed that straight away. Did you, when you were watching it?
I didn't see the podium, I guess, after the race.
Oh, my God, Curb. Have you seen it now?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it now. I saw a picture where the, what do they call those promotional, those checks, those fake checks they give you, you know, when you win something. It was taller than the podium.
Oh, my God. It was the most – I saw it. I was watching it on the plane coming back, and the only reason I watched the after ceremony was for you, Kerr, because you always, you know, lament how bad it is. Yeah. I saw that podium, and I stopped because they hadn't even gotten to the podium yet. I stopped. I was like, I can't watch this. It's going to be too hurtful to watch. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It was like – Spinal Tap. Right. You remember that movie when they lower Stonehenge and it's like 18 inches high?
Right. Exactly.
That's exactly what it was. It was unbelievable. And I, like I said, I know other people have commented on it, but it was truly unbelievable. And if I could bend Roger Penske's ear for 30 seconds, you know, anytime these days, I'd show him a picture of that. And I say, is this representative of your organization? Is this how you want to be represented?
Right.
And yeah. Have him tell me somehow that's okay.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about it a bunch of times. Sometimes it's just a lot of low hanging fruit that wouldn't really cost you much money. Right. I mean, it's
that thing didn't cost him 50
bucks. We're not talking
about
multi-million-dollar investments here. You know, it's
like, thank God not many people are watching that freaking Farkas, you know, yeah. Thank right. God. Curb, I need to go back and kind of correct something I said last podcast. Will you indulge me to do that?
I will. Go ahead. Sure.
I said something along the lines of, I think IndyCar should have harder tires anyways, because the soft ones kick off too many marbles, and everybody should just race on harder tires. And I didn't accept that as an excuse for the lack of passing at St. Pete.
Right.
And I have since heard, and I'll have to give Alexander Rossi some credit for setting me straight on this, that the hardness was an issue, but the lack of disparity between green/reds, whatever you want to call them, really never went off, because the lighter weight of the car didn't degrade those. So the degradation of those tires wasn't enough to create a big enough discrepancy between the reds and the blacks. And therefore that was a big part of the problem in the lack of passing. So in principle, you know, I still have the same principle that I wish in general tires would get harder, but it the tires were definitely a factor in the lack of passing at St. Pete. And I think I probably misspoke on that. So I want to correct that.
The record has been updated and duly noted.
Yeah. But the other thing that I kind of blew off, which is also kind of a correction from last, I don't want to get in the habit of doing this because I'll be correcting every previous episode every time. So, but the other thing you mentioned at the time is like, well, if this is a problem to get the tires to degrade, you know, why not stick more weight in the car? And at the time I was like, that's, you know, in an already overweight car, that sounds like a stupid idea. That's sounding like a less of a stupid idea now, if it's going to be the weight that's going to be necessary to get that disparity between those tires. And so adding ballast to the cars, as crazy as that might sound, might actually be part of the solution to getting some decent racing, because I think that the tire situation as it now looks, without the hybrid system being in place, it's going to be a disaster. Like, it's going to be, you know, processional at almost every street and road course. And that's a bit of a disaster for IndyCar as well.
Yeah. Different tracks bring different, you know, factors to bear on the cars and the tires, and hopefully, you know, come up with a new, different approach that will help them overcome that. But once again, IndyCar's giving themselves a hurdle that they have to overcome, and they never make it easy on themselves.
Yeah. Kerb, did you notice that Liberty Media looks like it's buying MotoGP for 4 billion euros?
I did not hear that, no.
Yeah, that's news today. Timestamp March 27th at 5:30 Mountain Time.
Well, that's interesting. Is there that much runway for MotoGP similar to Formula One, do you think? Or do you know anything about MotoGP?
I don't know
MotoGP?
Much about MotoGP. I don't know much. I mean, I watched a race when I was over in Europe last weekend. It doesn't do anything for me personally, but I can understand the appeal. It's incredible what those guys are doing, the speeds they're carrying. The racing's very tight and close. There's a lot of pretty cool. I think, and I made this comment when I was watching it, whereas like a Formula One race and even arguably an IndyCar race is better to watch on TV, I think a MotoGP race would be awesome to see in person. It has a huge following and it's a big deal. So, I mean, I don't know the economics of the price or anything like that, if it makes any sense, but it's kind of a staggering number.
I mean,
it makes
from
you,
what
makes
I can
you
tell,
wonder what they pay for IndyCar.
Probably a rounding error on that MotoGP contract, but
maybe
it's fair to say that MotoGP is more popular in Asia and Europe, right, than it is in America.
Yes, that's true.
So I don't have anything bad to say about it. I agree with you about the bravery and the spectacle of those guys. Having said that, I did go out to watch the motorcycle races that they held at Indianapolis at Speedway in 10 years ago or something. And I think they had high hopes for that. It really didn't sell. It really didn't develop a following here. And I admit that it didn't really do anything for me either. So
that's fair. Well, look, I mean, maybe the fact that they're not big in the States is, one of Liberty's reasons they're doing it is they think they can kind of do the same thing they did with Formula One with MotoGP here. I mean, that would be a reason to buy it. Kerb, did you catch any of the IMSA Sebring 12-hour?
I watched the very end, last 20 minutes or something like that. That's about it.
Right. I did watch the end. It was a great end, right? I mean,
Yeah.
It seemed like kind of a great race all through. Like all the categories were close, and that was a great ending with Bourdais and the guy chasing him and all that. That was pretty good stuff.
Delatraz, was it? I think.
Yep.
So the one thing I was disappointed in, of course, they had to do their best to interview each of the category winners after the race, but I kept wanting to see somebody interview Bourdais, and that guy kept flipping his high beams at Bourdais all around the track. I was like, I just kept thinking, man, Bourdais's got to be sitting there cursing under his breath.
Yeah, that was kind of although I noticed Bourdais gave him some of that back as soon as he got behind him.
Well, yeah, but I think he deserved it at that point.
Yeah, it was kind of a D move for sure.
But then I was surprised to find out the kid had never really won a major race before. I mean, I thought he was somebody that knew what he was doing. I mean, obviously he knew what he was doing, but I mean, I thought the Stellatraz had more reason to be that cocky than he apparently did.
It'd be a great question to ask him.
Yeah.
Kerb, I've been watching the Beckham documentary. Have you seen this?
No.
You should. Very good.
I won't.
Go you ahead. Won't?
No.
Why?
I'm not a soccer fan or a football fan, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a Posh Spice fan. I just don't have any reason to be interested.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you one right now.
Okay. All right.
I am the exact same as you. In fact, I loathe soccer. I loathe football or whatever, like I said, whatever you want to call it. I hate how they go flopping around faking injuries. I loathe it.
Right. Okay.
I've never been particularly fond of David Beckham, of what I knew of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I will confess that I think, Posh Spice is not bad.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Despite all those incredible barriers, I kept being told by people, it's a great thing, you got to watch it, it's great. And I'm watching it, and I'm enjoying it immensely. And I think you would, too. So I'm just going to put that out there. I think you will surprise yourself in what you'll find. But this is not the point I'm making.
Okay.
I just want to say, did you know that Horner and David Beckham are both married to Spice Girls?
I did. Sure.
Okay. Well, just wanted to get that out there.
Let's make sure everybody knows that.
Kerb,
tell me
yes,
since you share my lack of interest in most of the things that go into this Beckham documentary, why is it so interesting to you? Why should somebody that doesn't care about Beckham watch it?
Okay, I would say that because you don't follow football, there's some incredibly compelling, like dramatic stories of like lead ups to certain events and matches in his life that really are incredibly compelling. Because I don't even know the result because I don't follow the sport at all, it's almost exciting because there's like this buildup where you're kind of building up to something where, any soccer fan would know the result of that game, but you don't because you haven't ever followed it. And it's really interesting. There's like all the subtext behind the game. The other thing I would say is that David Beckham is kind of not the guy And I realize documentaries, you know, have us, you know, they have this way of making people look one way or the other. I'm not totally naive in that way, but right. His background and stuff can't be denied. And he's not the guy I thought he was, in a background or in his current disposition. So I think for all those things, it was just, it's just interesting. It's a story of, like I said, just so completely different than what I expected it to be that it just struck me. And I think it would you too. I think I know you well enough to know that I think you would enjoy it.
So what you're saying is Beckham has a better documentarian than IndyCar.
That's for sure.
Okay.
We should hire that guy.
Right. All right. Well,
Curb.
If I'm flipping around and it catches my eye, maybe I'll give it a shot. I did take your recommendation and watch the Yogi Berra documentary, and that was good.
Yeah, that's a slam dunk for you.
Even my wife enjoyed it. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. But I think I'm telling you, I think you'll like Beckham too. I do.
Okay.
It's not the Bend It Like Beckham, it's the actual Netflix documentary.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to watch the Nolan Ryan. I haven't got to that one yet, so I'm going to have to fit that one in
for Beckham. Yeah. Yeah, that's also an excellent one. Again, a subject matter I have zero interest in, and that was quite good as well.
Okay.
Curb, you know who we don't talk enough about enough?
Who? No, I don't know who.
What IndyCar driver do we not talk enough about?
Marcus Ericsson.
That was close. I think this guy's the new Marcus Ericsson.
Alexander Rossi.
Give you a hint.
Alexander Rossi.
No, we talked too much about him. Marcus Armstrong. You know, he's presented himself very well in these first two races.
Sure.
He's right in there. And, you know, he's just in his second year, and I don't even think the commentators talk enough about him. You know, it's like they kind of blow him off too. And to me, that guy is starting to look like a real contender.
I agree. I think, you know, he obviously was very strong in that first heat race. I was a little disappointed in him in the whatever you call it, the final on Sunday at Thermal. I was a little disappointed he didn't show more. I would be surprised if he didn't get at least one podium this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe even more than that. I think
he could very easily be a top 10 driver, and I could see at least one podium for him.
We need to talk about him more. Okay.
We'll make an effort.
All right, Curb. I hate to do this, but Thermal.
Okay.
Where to start?
At the beginning.
Okay. So I guess at the beginning is you kind of half-heartedly and half-acidly promote this thing, which I think you and I were, along with others, saying, you know, trying something different, putting something, you know, all good idea, you know, reminiscent of the Marlboro Challenge, all that kind of stuff. So I don't think anybody's bashing the concept per se. You know, how they promoted it, how the million shrunk to a half million, how there seems to be a tremendous amount of missteps going into it. Like I said, I don't want to get into the block and tackle of like what could have been better, what could have been worse. It was the first time, a lot of unknowns and all those manifested themselves. I want to take a bit more of a cerebral approach to this than others.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And I don't want to be real flip floppy like other of our brethren in the media who seem to be switching back from bashing the crap out of the event to then a day or two before calling it an elegant solution.
Perfect. It was perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. He didn't even use the term elegant solution. It was the perfect solution or something like that. So that was stunning that you could sit there and bash it for weeks on end and then write an article, say it was the perfect solution.
just to listen to that podcast last week and then read that 2 days later in print was just.
Do you think they even picks up on the irony of that?
I was sorely tempted to make a submission to his mailbag this week, pointing that out, but I decided I had better things to do.
Yeah, exactly. Don't waste your time. You got problems like they keep the commentators were incessantly talking about going for the cash. You know, and I understand they're trying to build the thing up, you know, during the race and so forth. But then you go and interview Grosjean, who, you know, is unluckily taken out of the thing, right? And right. The first thing out of his mouth is how stupid the whole thing is. And that, you know, their car repairs are going to cost way more than any kind of cash they could possibly enter. It just takes everything the commentators say and just reduces it to zero in a millisecond.
Yeah, the reality on camera did not match up with the hype. It was often, rudely disproven, as you point out there with Grosjean. Even when they're having a lighthearted interview with Power, I think maybe at the beginning of the second race or something, he's talking about how he dodged the wreck there in the beginning of heat one. And so, well, I saved the team $300,000 right there, right, with that move alone. You know, it's like that was valuable as winning and the heater of the race, you know, to the team. It was just avoiding being in a wreck. So.
Yeah, the very fact that you have drivers talking about like the cost of damage to the cars like during the race, when they're trying to make this like a big deal, these are the best in the business and all, you know, they're trying to make, you know, IndyCar like these are the best drivers in the business and going for the cash and all that. And then you got like some drivers like talking about a $50,000 wing or winglet or something like that. It reduces that all to rubble in like 2 seconds. You know, right. Anybody watching it is like, I never hear a Formula One driver talk about, you know, even though he just wrecked a $2 million car, you know, $20 million car, $50 million, whatever they are, right? You know, right. He just smashed it to pieces. He never talks about how much it cost, you know. It was just like, you know. And I don't even remember IndyCar drivers ever doing that in the past, you know. It was like, yeah, we wrecked a car. But, man, now it's like, oh, yeah, it's a $100,000 wing. And it's like, oh, come on. I mean, it's just, again, emphasizing that this is small potatoes. It's like a, you know, Friday night sprint car race.
I think a lot of that stuff was planted in their heads by all the chatter in the lead up to the race. And
true.
And I think it just kind of pops out when you get put in that situation. You know, I was watching I watched the first Peacock on Friday, that first test session. And I didn't watch anything else until Saturday night and watched the qualifying session. And I actually found it encouraging that Ericsson put it into the wall, because part of the chatter had been they're not even going to try hard to protect their equipment. They're not even going to, you know, they're going to drive at 90% or 95%. They're not going to drive to 100% because, you know, they're going to be under team orders to protect the car and not cause any damage. And, so to see Ericsson throw it into the wall during qualifying, I thought was kind of an encouraging sign. He didn't get the memo, apparently, about not going, you know, 10 tenths. So I thought that was a promising sign, but it did not. Other than, you know, that unfortunate mistake there at the beginning of heat one, you just didn't see that the rest of the weekend.
It's hard to comment on the whole thing because it is just this mixed bag of things. Like you appreciate the effort. You could see where there's, you know, changes that could be made that improve. And like I said, other people have commented on this, and I don't really want to dig into that so much.
Well, I've thought about it for a couple of days. I've kind of gone back and, you know, I've had the range of reactions to how the event went. But I think in the end, what I think would be the healthiest for IndyCar is if they shrug it off and move on and don't let people beat them up. Say, hey. Okay, we tried it. It can be improved. We're going to try again next year and try to do better, or we're going to not do that again and we're going to try something else, but we're going to keep trying. I'd rather kind of see that kind of, you know, screw you. We did our best. We'll try again next year and we'll keep trying rather than, you know, curl into a fetal position and take all the hits.
I think that's a great point. I also think it was a tremendous missed opportunity. From a marketing standpoint, I mean, Curb, think about that. You could have, for $500, you know, as a fan of IndyCar, I kind of shied myself. Well, I was out of the country, so I couldn't have gone anyways. But I got to tell you, for $500 to be able to, you know, for 3 days, be at a very nice place, right? Walk the paddock, meet, you know, run into the drivers everywhere at the taco truck or whatever, because you're running into them everywhere, get, you know, close access to teams, the pits, everything. It would have been a tremendous place to just go, you know, for $500. That was the bargain of the century. Right.
And it was that's $500 inclusive. I mean, that was that included food and drink. You didn't have to get your wallet out.
It was.
I mean, it's not just a ticket for $500. It's food, drink, everything for $500. I mean,
right. And by all accounts, they had like, you know, a few hundred people there. I mean, if they had promoted that properly, they would have sold out, you know, thousands of tickets just saying, hey, you want to run into a driver at the taco truck? You want to be able to walk the pits, you know, for 3 days and talk to, you know, mechanics or whoever you want to talk to?
If they go back and do something similar again, I mean, that's the most positive thing you've heard about this weekend is the experience of the people that did pay the $500 to attend. Uniformly, the spectator feedback has been great for the weekend as a whole. Now, nobody's saying that was a scintillating race, but the experience they had out there has uniformly been positive. And so I think if they do something like that again and they, you know, identify how many tickets they can sell before the 2 weeks before the race and then actually promote it, like you say, I think they would they'd sell out. I'm confident they would sell out. Well, I don't know how many tickets they'd have to sell, but they would sell them out.
2 seconds. And I mean, and it's not like the ticket sales are going to ever, you know, account for the cost, but I kind of feel like, you know, for me, it was kind of a missed opportunity. That might have been a really interesting thing to go to.
It's like they were almost forced into selling the tickets for $2,000 each, even because people complained about not being spectators allowed. And then, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it dropped to $500. And
they said, supposedly the county let them have more.
Yeah, we have more capacity than we thought or something, blah, blah, blah. It was... You know, I mean, spectators were never the point of the event to begin with, but the ones that were there had apparently a very positive experience. And I think that the word will get out. And if they do go back, they'll have no problem selling those tickets again, I think.
Yeah. Well, it seems unlikely they'll go back. I think where thermal was maybe a bit more relevant is that certain drivers needed to show themselves a little bit and their abilities. Callum Ilott comes to mind. Alexander Rossi comes to mind. Blomqvist comes to mind. Rosenqvist continuing his strength comes to mind. I think for all those guys who are kind of in this risky career situation, it was probably a good event for some of them to kind of show their continuing relevance in the series. What say you?
Well, I think just the amount of time they had in the car, you know, if you came out of St. Pete, you know, feeling like you were behind the eight ball, you know, usually the next race is always, you know, very limited practice, right into qualifying, right into race. You hardly have time to breathe if you're a driver that's trying to catch up. And so this is probably a nice opportunity for the Colin Brons of the world and the Ilots, as you say, and other people that got off to a rough start at St. Pete. It's got to be a positive from that point of view, I would think.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, the fact that Ilott was kind of right in there amongst the best of the McLaren drivers, don't you think that helps his chances there next year?
Looks better than his performance at St. Pete, right? So, I mean, he's kind of redeemed himself. Makes somebody think, well, maybe St. Pete was just an off day. He didn't have much time with the team. Come here to Thermal, gets, you know, 2 days of testing with the team before the race, probably much more comfortable. This is probably more representative of Callum Ilott that we thought we had than the St. Pete race, right? So anybody that, you know, was kind of in a similar position, it was probably a great weekend for them. That's the way I'd look at it.
Even like a Pietro Fittipaldi, right?
That's a night and day. Well, the whole Ray Hall team is a night and day improvement from St. Pete, and I guess that jives with how they did last year. They were good on those road courses. But yeah, Fittipaldi, the whole Ray Hall team. Blomqvist was really fighting to make it out of that heat race, wasn't he, I think, if I remember right? And so it was probably a much better showing for him. Probably good for his confidence compared to the St. Pete event.
Curb, I know you love Marty Schneider, but we had the weights at St. Pete, and now we had the blocks of cheese at Thermal. What are they having Marty do? Come on, help us out here.
Well, somehow I knew that would come up when I saw that on this podcast. But, Marty's a team player. They give him some grater and some blocks of cheese, and he does what he's told, I'm sure. He really sold it. I got to give him credit.
That was awesome.
You know, it's consistent with the highest quality of analysis you'd see on a Formula One TV show broadcast, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You get David Coulthard out there with a block of cheese and a grater.
Yeah, can't you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Martin Brundle. Yeah.
Martin Brundle. Kerb, I don't know if you noticed, but there was some profanity uttered by commentators, including your Marty Schneider.
I did not notice that. Was that on the race broadcast or on the Peacock shows?
I don't remember. Well, it would have been either on the qualifying or the race itself, I because that's all I watched, so it had to be on those. But I think it was all mistaken, you know, like they were misspokes, but they came out nonetheless. I mean, Hinch said the S word.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I heard Marty Schneider say, and cover your ears for your kiddies here, hard on.
Somehow I missed that, probably for the better, but yeah.
So, yeah, I was shocked. I was blushing. By the way, that was the worst driver start engine I ever heard for any race.
It was lacking, yes. I can't remember who that guy was now, but it was definitely lacking.
Oh, it's awful. Really bad. Really bad.
It was so bad that it took him like 10 seconds to start their engines, I think.
Yeah, like, what? Try again. Yeah. I'm going to start my engine to that. Try again. It's also a bit of an irony that the two richest teams took home all the money at the Thermal, or took home the most money anyways.
Right.
I'm surprised the conspiracy theorists haven't come out. This is just another way to Penske to pay himself back.
Yeah, except Chip got the top prize, so.
Yeah. Kerb, we're running out of time, and I do mean that sincerely. I've got very limited time left. I wanted to do a shout-out to you. I was listening to – I just stumbled upon an old episode of ours flying out to Europe, and I listened to 5 minutes of it. And in that podcast, you predicted – that there was no way they were ever going to race on Broadway in Nashville.
Did I? Wow.
Yeah, you did.
Good for me.
You called that precisely. I tell people this all the time. They're like, why do you let Kirby utter anything? These are ridiculous theories he comes up with. And I'm saying, man, he turns out to be right a lot. There's another example of it.
Well, thank you for defending me. Thank you.
I do. I'm out there every day for you.
Great. Were you aware? I just heard this today, and I must have missed it, but Hy-Vee signed up to sponsor the Milwaukee Mile doubleheader.
I was not aware of that. I heard they were in contention, but I did not hear that. But because I heard they were opening places in Wisconsin, so it kind of made sense.
Well, that's great news for the event, I think, because I had not been aware of a title sponsor so far, and obviously that'd be the first step to failure if they couldn't fill that kind of hole. So so good to have a title sponsor, and secondly, good to have somebody that probably is going to activate very enthusiastically, more so than the average sponsor. So I think it's good news for Milwaukee.
They're also hedging their bets by sponsoring NASCAR in Iowa.
Well, they're an enthusiastic sports marketer in general, so good for them. Hopefully, NASCAR doesn't take Iowa away right before they take Long Beach away from IndyCar. So,
well, I think the only thing you can say about that, and I think you, when we were talking about it this morning, you mentioned this, and I think your clear thinking here is like, why isn't this thing being framed like, yeah, we're IndyCar's bidding for Long Beach, just like NASCAR's trying to take it away. And it's a bidding war over a property. Instead, it's being framed as like, you know, NASCAR's, you know, basically just trying to steal it or something, and IndyCar's just sitting there, you know, dopishly, which you would kind of expect them to do, but it doesn't sound like they are. It sounds like they're actually trying to prevent that from happening.
Sounds like Penske is, you know, aggressively competing for this, and hopefully they'll prevail, because they really can't afford to mess with that Long Beach, or let NASCAR mess with their Long Beach race.
The other thing I haven't heard anybody say is how horrible of a race would that be, a NASCAR on that track? It would just be awful.
Well, you won't hear anybody say it now, and you won't hear anybody say it afterwards either. You'll never hear that. Yep. No matter, even if it is awful, you'll never hear it.
Good point.
Lastly, since we're patting each other on the back, I would point out that you were very complimentary of NASCAR apparently paying Netflix $5 million to get their version of Drive to Survive on Netflix. And I've heard good reviews of the show itself, and B, it must be working, because NASCAR's ratings have been consistently up for every race this year. Give them a break on the Daytona 500 had to run on Monday, so that's an exception, but every other normal race they've shown on TV this year has been up, I think, at least 6%, if not more. And they're really having a ratings revival this year. And some people are giving their show on Netflix some credit for that. And so I think your suggestion that $5 million was a bargain in terms of a marketing ploy to get that show on Netflix is probably proven to be prescient.
Yep. Sad, but true. Kirby, anything else?
But did you hear that 100 Days to Indy is going to be on Netflix?
I did not hear that.
Now, it'll be last year's 100 Days to Indy, not this year's. But
it's a start.
On Netflix. It's a start.
It's a start.
Can you imagine when they tune into the race this year to see that Jack Harvey guy that bumped Graham Rahal, and he's not even going to be in the race?
Yeah.
Just seems funny.
Yeah. Kirby, anything else?
That's it. That's all I got. Okay. Do we have an X handle this week?
At Hero IndyCar. At HIRO IndyCar.
And I see we've stepped up our X activity in recent times.
A little bit. So, a little bit.
Pay attention. Sign up to follow. You'll get lots of... I won't say lots, but the occasional insight from the King Hero.
pithy comments.
Right.
Pithy comments. Yep. All right, Kerb. That's it. Good night, everybody.
All right. Take care, everybody. See you in 3 weeks at Long Beach.